Stay with us.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Beck on Sirius XM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions, and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Ponds family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Friesian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to know a secret? The Massachusetts breeding program pays huge bonuses for finishing first, second, or third at any racetrack in the country. You didn't know that, did you? Massbreds get paid up to an additional 25% of their purse earnings for the owner and breeder and stallion owner and developer. It's the best kept secret in racing till now. Tell all your friends, and to learn more, visit massbreds.com.
Would you believe that champions weren't measured by rings, but by a crown? That the history books were written on dirt? That the greatest of all time was a horse?
He is moving like a tremendous machine.
Experience the magic at this year's Belmont Stakes as we honor the 50th anniversary of Secretariat's legendary Triple Crown Triumph. Join the celebration at Belmont Park on Saturday, June 10th. Tickets on sale now at BelmontStakes.com.
Down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
And when the sun goes down and the moon comes up, I turn into a teenage cuckoo mug. Yeah, I cruise through the city and I roam the streets.
We're back at the races. We're at Hotel Monteleone in New Orleans, and the HBPA convention will start, I guess, tonight, really, with a kind of a welcome, you know, welcome reception. And we'll talk to Eric Hamelbeck in the next little while, the last 20 minutes of the show, kind of help us roll into the convention. And as we recap the weekend, Rich Migliori joining us from America's Day at the Races on Fox. And I just was joking on off air. I was about 15 minutes late getting to Mig, but I had Ed Mosier talking, so I wasn't going to pull him up.
No, there's, you know, situations where you've got to, you get them running, you got to give them some rain, just let them, you know, bowl along. And I would call you a globe trotter, but since you cover thoroughbred racing, I want to call you a globe galloper. How's that?
Thank you. Exactly. I don't know. I don't know if I, I don't know if my gait, if I have a trotty gait, so yes, so I think gallop makes sense. I like it. Well, the, I mean, I don't want to doubt, you know, run into the races that you guys weren't covering on television, but I guess we could really actually circle several things, but I actually, before we do that, I'm afraid we've got you've got another rider. It just occurs to me that I should bring up Alex Kanchari with you. We're going to do some things with some of the Minnesota people here tomorrow that have been close to the family, to his late father as well. Rich, I don't want to say it's an epidemic, but you know, we've now had two self harm incidents and tragedies.
No, it's very alarming. I mean, you know, listen, obviously as a former rider, you feel like you're a part of this, you know, fraternity, if you will. And as a parent, it's devastating to hear that a young person would feel so desperate that was their only, you know, or what they thought was their only option. And, you know, leaving behind a, you know, wife and two little ones and, you know, and a kid that, he had the most infectious smile. I spoke with him, you know, after I had retired from riding. I was out in California covering races, and our paths crossed. And just thought he was a great kid. I mean, you know, amazing. And I think it underscores the fact that no matter, you know, obviously this is specific, you know, to being a rider and the pressures of making weight and delivering, you know, you don't win, you don't ride, you get less mounts, it's a catch 22, and the omnipresent pressure of the danger of it, and not being able to articulate that because there's such a macho thing about it, and you know, you got to be tough. I mean, I took such pride in, you know, riding hurt sometimes, like I had nothing's going to stop me, and you know, it takes a toll on you, not just physically but mentally, and it's devastating. But this underscores the fact that in any walk of life, you don't always know what someone's going through, and what they're dealing with internally and how they choose to deal with it. And I think, you know, just a reminder that, you know, pick up the phone, pay a visit, just, hey man, how you doing? Whoever it is. I mean, I know I made several phone calls last week to people I haven't spoken with that I care about. I genuinely care about. Just life takes you in different directions, and you know, you got your own things you're busy with and dealing with, and but I made a bunch of phone calls this past week just to say hi. And actually, you know, it was interesting. I received some phone calls from people that I have had relationships with, but maybe again, just we haven't touched base, and you know, kind of felt like that was a little bit of what they were doing. Just, hey, you know, you were on my mind, and I think we all got to let other people know how much we genuinely care, even if, you know, our lives get in the way of, you know, reaching out.
No, it also, there's also the more formal aspect of what needs to be, and I imagine that it goes on kind of unnoticed per se in regards to, you know, the jockey, the guild. I've seen some quotes from Terry Meeks, and you fold in, I suppose, the chaplaincy and the work that they do. What mechanisms to your, you know, to what you think in, through your career, Rich? What outlets were there and what resources?
Well, I mean, it's gotten better in that respect. I think, you know, when I first got, you know, my license and I became a guild member, it was less support, more, you know, kind of facilitating different things. I remember there was one situation, looking back on it, you know, guys protect other guys too much when it comes to, especially with like substance abuse, you know, don't want them to get in trouble. And yet they're out there riding a 1,000-pound animal with you. You know, there was one situation where, you know, and the guild has changed. This isn't the same leadership, and it's certainly, you know, evolved. But one rider who actually had gotten drunk and then, you know, trying to get him sober so he could ride a night cart at the Meadowlands instead of saying, whoa, you got an issue. We got to, you know, help with that. I think, you know, that's come a really long way. But I've been reading a lot about different organizations within sport and how they deal with things. And I think racing might do well to look at the NHL and their players assistance, you know, and players association, and the way they've really come, talk about evolving, and how they identify at risk or guys that are struggling. And, you know, the problem with racing or jockeys specifically is that it's not a team sport. You don't, you know, you may ride a lot for a stable, but guys aren't under contract to stables, and, you know, you're part of the team as much as you're a replaceable part of the team, right? And then you're going back to the locker room with people you compete with. So you know, there's like a line there. How do you be a good person and try to help somebody, but at the same time, their competition, it's a very tricky balancing act. But out of all the organizations I was reading about, I think the NHL has really done a really good job of it. And I think that they're going in a direction that maybe the model could kind of be used as a template for, you know, jockeys. And even go, like, you know, most riders don't, you know, get a full formal education. So you don't have those formative years where, you know, you're hanging out with kids and you're learning more about relationships. You're cast into a position of having to deal with adults and adult pressures before your mind is really formed to that point. And one thing with a lot of hockey players, like, they don't go to college. They go to play peewee hockey or, you know, different levels of hockey, and they go live with a host family. And there is like an actual concerted effort to make sure that these young people are taken care of and develop while they're still doing something that's not within the norm of most kids. And, you know, again, we talk about everybody's personal journey. Mine, you know, living on the backstretch as a kid, and I was fortunate. We had a wonderful barn, and a lot of the people in the barn look after me. You know, one of my best friends to this day, he still drives horse vans now. He was one of our best grooms. Got, you know, rubbed all the tough horses. Ricky, everybody called him Ricky. His name's Darryl Howell. you know, he and I had dinner a couple weeks ago. We can keep on planning to go see Dennis and Julia Bride. So I just think that we've got to be more conscious of the fact that you've got young people that have to act like adults. And at the end of the day, they're not adults. And now, and I'm not saying, listen, Alex Conchari was 29. And I don't know all his situation, but when he started, he was much younger. You know, so again, I'm going to be unpopular to say this, but this is another thing I've been thinking about. I think the minimum age to be a rider should be 18. You know, 16 is just, I think, a little bit too young, and you're not making decisions, logical decisions about your life, your health, how you reduce, how you approach it. I would be, and I know I'm going to hear from riders, and it's going to sound hypocritical. I think the minimum age should be at least 18.
Interesting. Well, and has that, in your mind or in experience, has that ever been broached? And I don't, and I suppose if outfits or if racetracks are regulating what age a horse can compete at, they could make that a house rule for riders.
Well, the way I understand it, Gulfstream, that's the house rule at Gulfstream. A rider has to be, you have to be 18 to be able to compete there. And I know some people say, well, you know, then, you know, guys that are going to struggle with weight, well, then maybe this is the life for them. If you're not able to make weight at 18, but you can at 16, and now you're forming these habits that are going to try to carry you through a career. Well, you know, some people aren't built to be riders. And then this is a generalization. This isn't specific to anything that we're, you know, what's taken place or transpired with two young men that were tragically lost too soon. But I'll go back. When I started, you came in the room, you're a kid, and okay, this is the steam room, this is the dry room. This guy will get you this if you need to lose weight, appetite suppressants. This guy can get you Lasix. Oh, this is the bowl to flip in. That was your introduction to a locker room, you know, how to lose weight. Everything was geared about losing weight or how to make weight. And it's different now. You've seen they've been taken out of jockeys' rooms and flipping bowls and different things. And I think people, again, have become more conscious and aware. But I think that you wind up wanting to do something so bad that you don't recognize the damage you're doing to yourself physically and hand in hand mentally. And I don't know what the answer is, but I think that's something that needs to be looked at, that maybe just too much pressure physically and mentally on people who, just maybe if they're a little older, a little more mature, their approach would be a little smarter.
Well, no, I didn't necessarily, want to delve too deep, but because we've been really just obligated, I mean, to discuss this, given its, unfortunate and tragic now repetition.
The last thing I think, let's kind of wrap that up, because I agree with you, and there's going to be deeper dives into this, but riders are open to criticism, and that's a fact. And whatever you do in a public forum, there's going to be criticism, right? I think it's gotten heightened because of social media, and everybody's got a platform to espouse their view. You know what they think is important, and they've got to bugle it, right? But I get a little bit tired of hearing, like baseball players, they get criticized. It comes with the territory. It's a little different for a jockey. You know, there's, you walk out of the room, there's a stronger possibility that you're not coming back the same way you went out than a baseball player or other professional sports. And I'm not for one second disrespecting football players, hockey players, all these athletes. But the fact of the matter is that you're not dealing with a teammate. You're dealing with a horse who is your dance partner. And these horses don't always cooperate, and some of them get very headstrong, and you're in positions that you're in danger. And it's a fact of it, and you accept it, you understand it, but there is a pressure to that. It sounds cliche. Ambulance follows you around at work. Yep. I mean, and not everybody's built for that, and not everybody I think everybody deals with it, but how you deal with it, and not that it's a constant thing, but it's there, and situations are going to come up, and I think riders need to be more open about, oh, geez, man, did you see, that horse clipped tails in front of me, I thought we were gone, oh, man, that was scary. Like, guys don't come back to the room and say that crap. They just shrug it off. I mean, covering racing now, if something happens, I saw Trevor McCarthy spill when he got injured recently, and he's come back and got a couple wins right away. He, 100 yards before it happened, I went, oh, this is bad. This is not, I could see what was coming.
Right.
And it's almost like I have post-traumatic stress. If I was riding, I'd have turned from the TV and walked away and got ready for the next race. So I guess the point is it's there. It's just that you're not allowed. It's almost an unwritten code that you don't talk about it, and you don't admit it, and you don't own up to it. And I think if riders were more forthcoming, especially with younger guys, and really got to the heart of it and made it okay, I think we got to come out of the shadows with a lot of this stuff and make it okay to talk about. And it's just not been the case over the years. It's this attitude But getting back to what I started on this, I just think that people that, constantly criticize, and not always, rightfully, need to understand that it's a little different than criticizing other sports. And it's an endeavor that a lot of people cannot do. So even when the guy says, "Oh, he's a bad rider," you know what? He's still part of 1,300 licensed jockeys in North America. And that's not even what you call active. Those are, you know, I think it's 1,100 that are what you would deem active that ride on a regular basis.
No, a fair point I know that certain people would then counter and say, well, it doesn't mean that I can't intelligently assess, the decision making, etc. And okay, that's also true. The problem you've got, of course, is the money that's involved and the preclusion in certain quarters that that we're betting on it and.
But you said it though, intelligently assessing,
right,
not emotionally assessing.
Well, that's it. Agreed. That's exactly, that's the differential. Is being, being reasonable about a complaint or pointing out, and at the same time, Rich, there's the riders, also not taking, and I know it's hard, I know it's an easy thing to say, the riders not taking all of that to heart necessarily, and maybe thinking about, just avoid looking at the places where those angry critiques are harbored. And that's easier said than done.
No, it is, especially in this day and age. It's an information age. You can never be anonymous anymore, right? I mean, it's just part of it. But again, I'll go back to the, I think maybe being a little bit older and being able to handle a little better just from a maturity standpoint. And I also, think there needs to be stricter protocols for getting a jockey's license. I think it's gotten a little too easy, a little too lax. I mean, I know the hoops I had to jump through, when I started, obviously, I was under contract, but then the outriders had to say you were very competent on a horse in the morning. You had the starter had to okay you. Then you spent a week with the patrol judges at different points of the racetrack, a week with the placing judges. Then you got a conditional license for two rides before they either said come back in 6 months or 3 months or a year or yes, you're good to go. And you had to have two riders in good standing. Notable people step up and say, yeah, I've worked horses with this kid and I think he's ready. And to me, it just seems like now it's almost a little bit too much. Oh, you can make weight. Okay. Where's your tack? I think, the preparation maybe needs to be different because when you're more competent at something and you're more comfortable and, confident doing it, I think the mental strain on you is less.
Yeah. Excellent. I appreciate it, Rich. And I know I got to get Tony as well later in the week and get thoughts from him. And we'll see who else is. There may actually be some people here at HBPA that will want to address it additionally. Let's get a few opinions in regarding the racing. I had Ben Colebrook earlier, and that 14 horse got them. Pretty much everything that could happen in a 14 horse race seemed to have happened.
Well, big fields lend itself to
exactly
that. But his horse was good. I mean, he was very good. I thought the runner up was good. Kind of had to make a wide run, almost looked like he got a little bit lost, and then found his stride again late and kicked on Brad Cox's horse. Names are escaping me. I apologize. But I thought that was a really good addition of the Gotham because we got such a good full field. It's weird how the Gotham almost kind of got caught in a odd place in the calendar where it became less important a race as it once was. But I thought that was a real good race.
The opportunity to look at the race and wonder about the loose horse and, oh, is the race marred, or, you know, certainly was marred for Andy Simoff. It felt terrible. But
sure.
The performance by the winner is not debatable. I mean, he was...
Ran.
What are you going to say? Yeah.
I mean, he ran hard, he fought, he kept finding. I mean, it's funny, the loose horse, yeah, kind of maybe sped the race up in the middle, but wouldn't that have hurt the eventual winner?
Well, he got the pace to chase, which, and they want that. Ben wants that for this horse. But he won by open lengths. I mean, he was drawing off with every stride, so...
Yeah, but again, I go back to this. He moved around the far turn. I mean, he made a big run. I thought he was making up ground still in a fast part of the race. I mean, he was in front by the time they turned for home.
Yeah.
I mean, he also kind of had to steady off the heels at one point and
yeah.
kind of kicked
yeah.
on again.
Yeah, exactly.
Slip Mahoney, that's... he was off a bit slow and came from last, and he was the one I thought kind of got swung out wide, and the horse almost just mentally kind of lost his focus there. He was just out in no man's land, and then when he kind of got it back together, he kicked the second time. I thought he made like two distinct runs. I think this was a good race, and I think Race Kane was very good. He's got a pedigree too. I mean, out of a Lemon Drop Kid mare, Violence. This was a really interesting race, and I got a kick out of reading Ben jump in a cab right after he saddled the horse to get to the airport so he could saddle.
Yep.
You want to talk about dedication. Holy cow.
He went same owners, and so he couldn't be around for the win, but he wanted to get to Turfway, which, of course, is 2 seconds from the airport, so it worked on that front, and then actually had a little bit of a trip in there. Didn't get an ideal scenario. Got the winner kind of got a jump on him. The winner was very good. I don't want to take away from Congruent and Antonio Sano. Sonny Leone actually aboard for. Every time now Sonny Leone wins a race, you're reminded. It's amazing. I don't know if Jim McInerney, if he does it on every Sonny win, but he says Kentucky Derby winning rider Sonny Leone. It's sort of like a moniker.
He earned
now.
That distinction.
Yeah, he did.
An incredible ride in the Derby, and listen, that fuels this game. We're all a little bit of dreamers or romanticists, right? Hey, this could happen to you. he rose to the moment too. I mean, he delivered an incredible ride.
Well, that was a big part of the weekend, obviously. Nice to talk to Ben. Before we go, Rich, we should also touch on that little Vic. And feels like a step forward. And certainly the sprint division can use, all the fresh faces that it can find. And here's the four-year-old that won with authority. Running son of a gun was okay, but had to settle and chase home little Vic, who gets his first triple-digit buyer. This, of course, Victor Martinez and his Victoria's Ranch and Juan Avila. They've had a nice run of success here, and a big part of the huge Saturday for Practical Joke.
Yeah, absolutely. And listen, little Vic is just a really cool, honest horse. I mean, he just shows up. He is honest as the day is long. And I'm a fan of the horse. I honestly, 6.5 to 1 was, I think, a bit too big of a price for him for a horse that creates his own trip. Usually, puts himself in good position. And, Carlos Olivero rides him with so much confidence. And, do you remember the show Little Vic? There was a series that only ran like 6 or 8 shows about a kid that wants to be a jockey, and he falls in love with this horse, Little Vic, and he follows him around and gets to ride him and in races and becomes Is this any familiar to you at all?
I heard the reference to this, and but I don't know anything about it from the 70s.
It was from the 70s. I remember watching it as a kid and like being enamored with it because I knew already I wanted to be a jockey. And I think you can find some of the episodes on YouTube. But Little Vic, it was pretty cool. And I mean, I don't know that this horse necessarily is named for that, but I mean, you know, that was the first thing that came to my mind.
Well, and here it is, a 6-part series that depicts incidents in the life of Jilly Walker, a 14-year-old orphan who becomes a jockey. Jilly trains Little Vic, a horse he later rides in the Santa Anita Derby.
There you go. It's cool. It's worthwhile. I mean, listen, maybe when I was like 12 years old watching it, it was better than like if I watch it now, but I loved it.
Well, it had Rory Calhoun. How bad could it be?
I mean, again, I don't know. I'd be interesting to ask the owners if that's where the name came from.
How about that? Rory Calhoun, kind of a big, tall, lanky type, speaking of taciturn, which I referenced Ed Mosier. he's actually a Rory Calhoun type, kind of a long, tall, taciturn cowboy look.
Yeah, that's funny. That's good.
I love it.
Well, how about the San Felipe? I like that Tim Yachtin won it.
But he's on with us next. He's joining us momentarily.
Yeah, good horseman. And, you know, that's a horse that he's had all along, too. So I thought that was a pretty satisfying result.
Oh, my gosh, yes. And then, of course, Forte came back with a plum and with style.
Oh, I tell you what, though, that he impressed me. As good as he was at two, I think he made that step from two to three in a big way. I mean, he traveled in the bridle more. He was always so responsive. Anything that Irad wanted, and you could see from the half mile pull out, he was going to win. It was just a matter of when he decided to tip him out. He excited me. He, like, you know, obviously 2-year-old champion and all that. I see a much more mature horse now.
2 weeks ago, people were panic stricken that there's no good 3-year-olds, and suddenly there's a bunch of good 3-year-olds. It's funny how the scene shifts.
patience.
Exactly. grasshopper. Patience, grasshopper.
Yes. Steve, have a great day.
Thanks, Reggie.
Tim Yachtin for me. Congratulate him for me, and I look forward to next week.
Talk to you from Vegas next week.
You globe galloper, you.
That's right. Rich Migliori, everybody. Let's stay right here. Tim Yachtin is going to join us right now. And there is so much to talk about with Yachtin. It's crazy. And two wins. He had two wins on Saturday and two wins on Sunday. And Tim Yachtin, good morning.
Hey, Steve.
I see you everywhere I go, and that started at Oaklawn, and here it is a week later, and things could not be going any better. Congratulations on the spectacular weekend.
Thank you.
I probably shouldn't do this. Let's start with Reciprocate, actually, and go back to last Saturday and Oaklawn and the Rebel, because I think people have already kind of forgotten or it's obscured how good he was and how much potential you got with him going forward.
Yeah, so he's a super, super gifted individual. We didn't have the cleanest of breaks leaving there. He showed another dimension. He got a lot of education and ran just a phenomenal race in defeat. But we've gained a lot out of it, and we'll regroup and figure out where our next target is. Unfortunately, you know, we didn't get the points and get the pressure off of us that would assert a spot in the Derby, but I think we're gifted enough where the next time we show up with a clean race, we'll be in good shape.
Reincarnate, and I saw somebody put up a picture of him. In fact, it might have been you that put up the picture of him on your Twitter feed, and came out well, and I suppose a trip back for the Arkansas Derby, or is that the first order or the first priority?
You know, my canvas is very blank right now. I haven't put any lines on it. So
all right.
Just going to regroup here, get through the weekend. We've got some weather coming in in Southern California, which you know, a little surprise again.
Jeez.
But we'll get through it and then start dialing in.
All right.
Where I'm going to move these guys around.
Well, then let's turn. Clearly, you're in a nice spot with Reincarnate. That conversation with Johnny and you and Jack Wolf. I mean, Johnny was so excited, the most exciting third place finish in his career. Let's get to Saturday, and I should go right. Yeah, I'll go to Practical Move, and just so happens that, you know, I'm now seeing this horse every time he wins a stake. Give us some feel for, you know, what went on since Los Al and you know, coming back and running the way he did.
You know, Practical Move, he's been a very, very straightforward horse. He's exceptionally gifted. He's a big horse, and I think it's taken a little time just for him to be able just to put it all together. He started off a little green, but he was green and still ran giant races. You know, his first out in Del Mar, his first start running against Cave Rock, couldn't have been more impressive. And then we just had nice progression. I was a little disappointed when we ran him in October. At Santa Anita, I really thought that this was his coming out day, and we ran into a rough race there, and you know, it was an inquiry. We got bumped multiple times, but you know, he never got discouraged either way. The rest is history, and he just keeps progressing. We gave him a break after the futurity just to give him time. Because he had had five races as a two-year-old. I didn't want to take a tired horse into the first Saturday in May. And so we gave him a breather, and he's developed, gotten stronger throughout that period where we've lightened up on his training. And I think he just really showed his maturity and flattered himself on the San Felipe.
Well, and of course, had already garnered some points for the Los Al Futurity, and one of the funny things, I was asked to present the trophy Saturday for this, and at one point between the photographs, after the horse left the winner's circle, as Frank would say, the run happy winner's circle, Mr. Amistoy said to me, do we have enough points for the Derby? We got points, right? I said, yes, you're in the Derby, and I said, it's more fun than the All-America Futurity. Because they're quarter horse people, and boy, what an introduction, John, for them to hit the thoroughbred circuit.
Yeah, and it's double the pleasure. They're Leslie and Pierre. They're both good horsemen. They've been in the game. Pierre's a hustled book. His father's trained. Leslie's trained. They breed. So, they went back to Florida and they bought Practical Move and they bought Blessed Touch. And, you know, that's the first time you venture out on your own and you're ponying up that money. And I mean, they've been paid back. They've bought two nice horses. I'm thrilled to death to be able to trade for them.
Unbelievable. Blessed Touch, of course, on Sunday with a good placement behind the very imposing Faiza, who won again. The way this race unfolded, and we need to get Ramon Vasquez into the story, because I've been singing his praises for several years, and it feels like this meet is really a spotlight opportunity for him, and here's a spotlight horse.
Yeah, it's a spotlight for both of us.
Well, you've been in the spotlight. For him, in terms of the opportunity to get to now be associated with the horse, just talk a little bit about your dealings with him and your confidence in him.
Ramon fits this horse like a glove. The horse enjoys him. His last two efforts aboard him, the horse is just, they're a great team. I can't compliment enough. We were fortunate enough to get great trips, the inside trip, but the horse is always there for him, and just can't compliment Ramon and my staff enough to get us to where we're at today.
Well, and he was good, even the along the way breaking his maiden, and of course he actually was DQ'd up to the win. If you go back to that Santa Anita race that you mentioned and getting banged around, but he takes a step forward. You can see the progress. And I mean, honestly, Tim, for all the carrying on over Forte coming back as a 3-year-old, and granted, okay, he's the returning 2-year-old champ. You got 100 buyer here, and you were doing the same thing, essentially coming back for a 3-year-old debut in a grade 2 major derby prep. Why is Practical Move not in the discussion here as the potential derby favorite?
Well, I don't mind flying under the radar here, Steve. Less pressure.
All right. I can understand that. I did see where you told Steve Anderson yesterday that, the Santa Anita Derby is the obvious answer, but that you weren't, you'll see where things are as they go.
Right. Like I said, my canvas is still blank. It's very likely that I'll come back with Practical Move in the Santa Anita Derby, and he's run well on the track, and it'll probably be the best scenario for us. But I didn't want to etch anything in stone and just leave myself the options, because fortunately there are a number of options that we can take advantage of. It's just a matter of, how many weeks I want and where I want them to be. So, but ideally, I'll run out of his own stall.
There you go. Couple of quick notes. We should mention, obviously, National Treasure unable to compete. Can you fill in the blanks on what happened there?
Yeah, so National Treasure, it's those highs and lows of the game. My day didn't start off very good. So we've been dealing with weather. National Treasure, unfortunately, he has a quarter crack that was absolutely fine, that it was something that we obviously had kept our eye on, especially with the weather. We weren't lucky enough. He bruised the inside quarter there. And, he's responded well over the last few days. We've drawn some of the bruising out and some of the soreness, and we'll be back on track. And now it's just a matter of how our weather is this weekend, and when we can start getting on a regular training cycle, and where our next target is going to be.
All right, so it's a wait and watch for National Treasure. Yeah. The other runners under your name, and Hijazi set the pace and ran okay, and he still seems to be a work in process. And Fort Bragg was a horse that the more I looked at him, the more I thought he was worth using. He didn't run badly. Some thoughts about the other check earners.
Yeah, so Fort Bragg, he's a little bit of a quirky horse, just a ton of ability. And he's actually the one that interfered with Practical Move back in October.
Right.
He's come out of his race in excellent shape. And he's still very much on the radar for us. You will see him back. He's a very hardy horse. And I'm, you know, just in the process of trying to figure out what's going to be the best route and where to bring him back. And so it's all a little bit early. I don't mean to be evasive, but it literally, we sure. just ran 48 hours ago. And, you know, again, fortunately, we have a number of options to entertain and see that we can reach that opportunity in May, reach the Derby there in May. But I do feel he's still very much a legit contender.
He's a Tappet out of a Shanghai Bobby mare. There's actually a story to be following about a Shanghai Bobby out of Japan that is going to compete.
I heard.
Yeah, is going to come for the Santa Anita Derby. And, you know, everybody seems to be ready for any of these Japanese invaders. Hijazi, I didn't get a chance to reach out to Gary Young, but what's the aftermath for him?
You know, Hijazi ran really, really well. I think he was a little aggressive in the beginning of the race. There was definitely, you know, we anticipated some pace. And right now, still chatting with Ammer on where we want to go from there. He didn't run a bad race whatsoever.
No.
I mean, he finished fourth, and he never, like, you know, threw up the flag. And by any means, he kept grinding away. So it's just I need to see how much he's moving forward off of that effort. And go from there and see whether we're going to be in the classic distance realm or what we're going to do.
All right. Well, those are the Derby Trail discussions. Practical Move was not the only three-year-old that came back for a seasonal debut under the Actine colors, because Kangaroo Court, Tim, I was so excited about this race between Kangaroo Court and Bus Buzz, and it did not disappoint. And they both really ran. You got to be absolutely thrilled with this Dad's Caps Calbred 95 buyer in his return. He'd been away since Del Mar August 20th, and he won very impressively.
He did. We're super proud of Kangaroo Court. He's all racehorse. I ran into a little hiccup when I was in the I'm Smoking at Del Mar. And, you know, I can't give enough credit to my clients. They really allow me to do what's right for my horses. I'm very blessed to have that opportunity, because when you're able to do what's right for your horses, give them a little bit of time, and when they come back and pay you off, like Kangaroo Court does, it just validates that doing the right thing is the right thing. And so, what a race! We were fortunate enough to have drawn the outside in the race, but to go down through there, these are Calbreds, and it just validates how strong the Calbred program is. I've been very lucky with Calbreds. I've had a number of top sprinters in the past that I'm very proud of. And I'm hoping that Kangaroo Court will follow in those steps.
Well, not just sprinters, Calbred. The Calbred of yours that I love is Macho Unusual, right? She was
correct.
She was a terror, and boy, she got hot in those two races a couple of summers ago, and I was on board for both of them. That was very, very good. I'm a big fan of hers. She's got to be having a first foal, no?
Well, the last I heard is that she was in foal to American Pharoah, the Yoshida family.
She got sold.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
She's just a beautiful mare, and I'm excited to see her offspring, and I'm very happy for the connections that ended up with her.
Wow. So. Yeah. Should they farm? Now I'm just looking. Should they farm? Yep. Yep. 1.1 million. That's interesting that George Krikorian, you know, who's got plenty of nice, pretty nice broodmare band. Interesting.
He does. And he still has Not Unusual. And so he still has the factory. So.
How old is she? She's got to be getting old.
She's probably getting up there because I've had several of her babies. Nice. And I think she's got a phenomenal produce record that one can be very proud of.
Well, Kangaroo Court, meanwhile, you've got the luxury of the cowbred scenario, but this feels like a three-year-old. He's a gelding, so it's not as if you got to go chasing windmills. But at the same time, it seems pretty clear that he's going to be a sprint division player.
Right. So, fortunately, we've got the Echo Eddie coming up.
Okay.
And this was a nice springboard to the Echo Eddie, which runs Santa Anita Derby Day, going 6.5. And after we run in that race, we'll make a decision where to go. Obviously, we have a few potential spots that we can target after that race, but I think the logical spot is to get one more solid race into him in his own division, take advantage of that program, and then we can go from there.
Outstanding. Kangaroo Court, and just looking at the dam, bonus spin. She's got a two-year-old by Cat Burglar, and she's got a yearling by Bodie Express. Very cool. The famed,
yes,
Bodie Express. So we'll watch for, we'll see what's coming. And in terms of the owner, you know, this is a fun story because this was a bargain at the Arizona sale, George Sharp.
Hey, yep. George Sharp bought Kangaroo Court on his own at the Arizona sale. I remember when he bought him, he was very excited and told me what a nice horse he had purchased. And he was absolutely right.
I guess so. $7,500.
Yep.
Unbelievable. Just unbelievable. That'll keep us all in the game. When you see somebody have a horse, get a horse like this for $7,500. Let's talk about Sunday as well. Tim Yakteen with us, who had a magical weekend. Four wins for four different clients. And the baffle win yesterday, Johans, with Umberto Rispoli as the favorite, 3-2, Kiathi, homebred out of the Congrats Bear. And this one basically, you know, comes through as the favorite.
Yeah. So again, I can only compliment my clients. They gave me the latitude. We had had high hopes for him. Obviously, he had shown a tremendous amount in his workouts as a young horse. He was a favorite in his first start in Churchill back in June. He came back. They gave him a little bit of time off. And then he came out west to California. He had trained exceptionally well in the morning. And then in the afternoon when we ran him on the dirt, he just he didn't necessarily replicate how well he had been working in the AM. So we thought, you know something, let's go ahead and just give him a try on the turf here. And that just paid off. His maiden win,
yeah,
was exceptionally impressive. And yesterday, we couldn't have been happier. We didn't have the best of trips, but he's come out of his race in super shape, and I'm just so proud. He's so gifted, and this is Joe and Debbie McCloskey's homebred, so that's, you know, another added pleasure and enjoyment when you do the matings. I think you have to be a breeder to understand what that means when you breed a horse like this.
No doubt. And they went to Nyquist, and there's behind, coming behind, there's a
gun hunter.
Well, there's a gun. Yeah, there's a gunrunner yearling, and there is a mastery. The gunrunner is a filly, which I'm sure they're delighted with to get a filly with gunrunner. And there's a mastery 2 year old. It's already been named Sea Dancer to look forward to as well.
Yes.
Very nice. And that dam. I got a vague recollection of the dam being out there. Did you have the dam?
I did not have the dam. So Adam Kitchen Man actually started off with her. Yeah. Yeah. And then, you know, the dam, she started her career on the main track, eventually migrated to the synthetic and the turf. And that's what sort of, you know, pushed us into taking into account that he might excel on that surface. And that's where his mother excelled.
Well, from the inside, from the three hole, and Rispoli coming down the hill yesterday in the Baffle. And that, of course, opens up a world of possibilities, because for him to win down the hill probably means he can mile as well.
Well, we're hoping that. Obviously, that gives us more options, because if he can sprint and mile, that just opens up a lot more doors for us. And so he's young. We'll figure out what our next step is going to be, what our next game plan is, and then go from there.
Nice. Clearly a horse with upside, Joe Hans. And just a maiden claimer, but Moonlight in Heaven breaks the maiden, the four-year-old. That came in the fourth race to kind of round out just the magical couple of days at Santa Anita between Saturday's two wins as well as the two on Sunday, and the placement you already referenced, Blessed Touch's third-place finish in the Santa Isabel. So, John, what a great weekend.
It was. Thank you, Steve.
Well, I should ask, what about Carmel Road from the Gotham? I'm sure you had to watch that a couple of times.
On Carmel Road, our hand was sort of forced in regard to the post position that we had. You know, he's a very genuine horse. I think we had to use him a little more early than we would have liked in regards to holding our position. And then the loose horse didn't help us.
No.
And anyway, but we'll regroup with him and figure out what we're going to do for him in the near future here.
And how about Blessed Touch? Is Santa Anita Oaks or out of town?
You know something? I don't know. I ran her back on short rest. We came back in 2 weeks, unfortunately, because the Santa Isabel did get pushed back.
Right.
Originally, I was going from the sprint to prep me into the Santa Anita Oaks. And but we did come back on short rest. So I need to see how she bounces out of it, and then go from there. I'll get together with Pierre and Leslie, and we'll map something out.
Very good. Well, couldn't have gone much better. That's the bottom line. Tim Yakdine, congratulations. And obviously we'll have plenty to talk about in coming weeks.
Thanks for having me on the show, Steve. Take care.
I appreciate it. Tim Yakdine, everybody. And, Practical Move, Kangaroo Court, Blessed Touch, on and on. I mean, this... the Baffle winner. This feels like a horse that is going somewhere. Bill Morey had Johans first for the first start, and then came out for the fall to Santa Anita. And he faced, even in those, actually in the dirt races, he ran got an 81 in October, an 81 buyer against Fort Warren. And Spun Intended was in that race as well, and then he had to face Spun Intended again in Spun Intended's win. Actually, Harlow Cap was in that race, who we still think has got plenty of upside. And then the move to the grass, where he really did jump forward. So now two wins in a row and a horse to keep an eye on. Johans. Yeah, that Kuyathi, you see, in fact, let me look quickly. We're going to take the break. John White is going to join us next before we sit down with Eric Hamelbeck to introduce the HBPA action. But that Kuyathi, as an outfit, I mean, as owners, I've seen their name feels like quite a bit, right? Yeah, they've had some partners. Here's one with First Home Thoroughbreds, and a couple of years back with Irv Noren, and also with Phil D'Amato. But the McCluskeys. Yeah, there we go. Here, found it. Red Lightning. Four horses that have made six figures. Yeah, you see their name, and it's distinctive, Kuyathi, which was the name I'm going to guess of their first horse, really. That Tim referenced. Yeah, she was a nice allowance horse. Did she have a stake placement? No. No. She broke her maiden at Golden Gate. Going back. And Bill Morey. There you go. So they've been in business with the Moreys for a while. There we go. 2 hours in. 2 hours and 15. And we'll check in with John White. I saw Mrs. John White on Saturday. But not John. So we'll get his thoughts on the weekend. And then Eric Hamelbeck will close it out this first day back in New Orleans at the races. Sirius XM. Stay with us.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Pons family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and curly stands, the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Friesian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? The University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals. With a proven track record.
Want to know a secret? The Massachusetts Breeding Program pays huge bonuses for finishing first, second, or third at any racetrack in the country. You didn't know that.